Hey everybody, thanks for joining us. Today is the Power Hour. It's going to go quick. We only have time to do 1 hour today, so you better jump in fast. The calls are starting to roll in. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything you want to talk about, press one. The sooner you do it, the better your odds are. We're going to get started.
Money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. And today is the Power Hour. I'm joined by the guys from Pittsburgh Power. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about engines, performance, horsepower, torque, maintenance, upgrades, troubleshooting, electrical emissions, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. Looks like today we've got Bruce and Ethan. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, great to be here, Kevin.
Is John playing hooky today?
John got called out to some racetrack for some type of testing, so he won't be back till tomorrow.
Got it. All right. He's quite in demand at times. So what's new and exciting at Pittsburgh Power this week?
Well, I think I'm going to show people how to take the variable geometry turbo apart on the exhaust side where the pins are. Because of the price of these turbos, anywhere from $2,100 to $3,500, once they get carboned up, the actuator is not powerful enough to overcome the carbon or it breaks the actuator. So if you take the turbo off, you take the clamp off, you pull the turbine housing off, and you get some brake clean and a toothbrush or a little brush that with brass bristles that look like a toothbrush. You get in there and you clean it, you put it all back together, you can save yourself thousands of dollars. And I talked about a month ago, I talked the guy through to do this on telephone, and he was successful at it. And we did one last week. And it had fault codes showing the turbo was it, and all it was is a buildup of carbon. So I'm going to have a little class. I'm going to set up a table in the shop. And every time we have a group of owner operators that are interested in our driver's lounge, we're going to take them back and show them how to do this to their turbo.
That is a great idea. When you do that, could you shoot a video and we'll put it up in our Let's Truck University as a teachable course?
Well, there's pros and cons to that. One of the cons is over the 40 years, I've taught too many other mechanics that become competitors of mine how to do things.
Got it.
But maybe we'll do it. I've always been one to share information and knowledge, and I always believed that it would come back to you in a good way. So we might do that.
Yeah, Bruce, I know how frustrating it is. I've been putting material out on business and taxes and now health and all the things we do. And over the years, I can't count how many times I have seen that material virtually word for word with somebody else's name on it. One of the worst cases, I was so shocked at this. I was on a load board one day and I saw this little advertisement on the side and it said, be successful as an owner operator, something like that. And that kind of stuff always catches my attention because that's the kind of stuff I teach. So I clicked on it and it was a business manual. And I had a business manual out at the time that I charged like $60 for. It was really, really in depth. I spent a lot of time putting it all together. So I thought, I'm going to buy this. I want to read it. You know, maybe I'll learn something, but I always want to keep up with what everybody else is doing. So I go to buy it, and it's like $400. And I thought, wow, that's pretty pricey. But, you know, this is what I do. I need to see this. Maybe it's worth $400. So I bought it. I am not kidding you, Bruce. They took mine, my manual, ran it through a lousy copy machine, didn't bother to even, you know, open it up in a true document and do a little editing. They literally took my book, ran it through a lousy copy machine, added about 200 pages of IRS forms, which was a total waste of paper and space, and they were selling it for $400.
Yeah, see? You know, and I always believed, and I've always done business with the people that do business with me and people that work with me, which is my suppliers. And I don't jump around. I mean, the same guy's been cutting my hair for 40 years. And so I try to stay loyal, but the trucking industry isn't like that anymore. And so we kind of have to be careful what we put in print because all the other shops try to backstab you on it.
Yeah, it certainly happens. You know, just our material, because our product is education, that's the product we sell, we have to put ours out. So, you know, I understand the stuff you guys do in the shop. A lot of it is very, very proprietary, and that is your. You let me know, though. I think that's a great idea to teach it there in your shop.
Okay. And we're going to do that for the owner-operators that are there that have a truck that's equipped with a variable geometry turbo. And I think I can even teach the people that are not mechanically inclined how to do this. Anyway, Ethan, good. Do you have anything?
Nothing new. We just had some shop work there this week.
Okay.
Well, let's get to some phone calls then. Let's start off in North Carolina. Paul, welcome to the program.
Howdy.
What's on your mind today?
Today, well, I want to know about the DD13. What sort of horsepower and torque ratings could you crank that engine up to without blowing it apart, but still be reliable?
Ooh, on that one, I've never seen one yet.
We need to fix that.
I
think that engine has a tremendous amount of potential.
Let me make a comment on that. I want to say you finished your sentence with without blowing itself apart. Dominic Santucci, D.A. Santucci, speed specialist that used to build my race car engines back in the 70s, his saying was, a great running engine is capable of blowing itself apart. It's up to you, the operator, to keep it together. So you've heard the term, that guy can beat up an anvil with a rubber mallet. There are some people like that. Most owner operators are not. But whenever you make a great running truck, you have to respect that. There was a guy from Los Angeles called me one day, and he said his grandfather always taught him with a truck, with great power comes great respect. So you have to respect the truck, respect the power, and drive it accordingly. So let's say stock, it'll go up a particular grade at 40 miles an hour. But with it set up, it'll go up at 60. Does that mean you want to go up that grade wide open at 60 mile an hour all the time? No. You settle back and you go up at 50, always having throttle left and keeping the RPM up. So I'm finished.
Got it. All right. Well, a couple things about that engine. It's about a 400 to 500 pound weight savings. It's a little shorter than the 15, so you get a little more space under the hood. About 65% of the parts, I believe, are common between the 13 and the 15, so a lot of similarities. And from the factory, the ratings are anywhere from I think 350 to 450 and 1350 to 1650 foot-pounds of torque are the factory settings on it.
So if the factory setting is 450, you could safely go to 550. You can always safely add another 100 horsepower. And sometimes you can add 150. And if a man's willing to drive it and watch the gauges and the RPM, you could probably add 200 to it. If the programs are available.
Yep.
but you can always feel safe going 100 horsepower over the factory spec.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. And what about the torque? How much would the torque go up?
If you added 100 horsepower, you'd probably add about 350 foot-pound of torque.
So based on
Ethan, you have
factory setting.
Ethan, on the dyno, what do you normally see if we add 100 to 150 horsepower? What do you see in a torque rise?
It varies from 250 to 350, depending on the engine and what we're doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you'd be looking at, you'd be at upwards of 1,900 foot-pounds of torque, which is pretty healthy. All right, we've got to get to a break. We're going right back and get to more of your calls and questions after this. Stick around. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Today's the Power Hour. Got Bruce and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. We're going to get right back to your phone calls. We're off to Washington. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. I've got a 99 12-7 Detroit. It smokes real bad white smoke on a cold startup. It clears up after you get the RPMs up and run it for a minute or two, but I'm thinking that sounds like a leaky injector. What do you guys think?
No, I think it's a PK or an MK instead of a BK, and the compression ratio of the pistons is too low.
Okay, a PK or an MK injector, you mean?
No, that's the style of the engine.
Oh, listen, sir,
I don't know, about a year ago we talked in length about the difference between the PK, the MK, and the BK. And if you're rebuilding the engine, always build it to a BK, B as in boy, a BK engine serial number, and get away from the ultra low compression ratio. John took a block with the PK and the MK piston in it and the head, and he CC'd it, and we found out that the compression ratio was in the high 13s. Is that what it was? Ethan, do you recall the compression ratio?
I remember the 16.5 yielded almost 15, and the other one only yielded like 12.7.
12.7, so that's the problem. That's why the white smoke until you get to about 140 degrees or slightly under that. So there is no cure
right.
for that. The only cure is to, when it's rebuild time, change the pistons.
Tom?
Yeah, this was rebuilt about a quarter million ago.
How long have you had this truck?
I've owned it about a year. I put it in service 4 months ago.
Has it done it since you've had it?
Yeah, and it did it before I bought it as well. And it's way more pronounced when it's cold outside. You know, if it's 80 degree ambient temperature, you don't notice it at all.
Okay. You know, the only other thing I would recommend just to be sure is an oil sample. Make sure we're not getting coolant, you know, excess fuel. An oil sample never hurts. So if you haven't been...
My fuel dilution was almost nil. My soot was a little high at 2.7.
Yeah, that's really high for a Series 60. Really, really high. Like, I would be trying to figure out why that is so high. You know, there's lots of things you can...
One thing it had a very filthy, to where you could peel it off with your fingers, layer of crud on a fleet air filter. I'm thinking that may have had a little to do with that.
Yeah, that certainly could. I mean, you restrict intake flow like that, and that'll certainly do it. I would focus. I think Bruce is probably right on with this one based on the fact that it gets worse when it's really cold. But I would focus on finding out why that soot is so high and getting that taken care of. Let's go to Illinois. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, guys. Mine does the same thing. I got a 96 and a DDEC 3, and it's white smokes like that. Calling about I'm getting a little oily sludge on my radiator cap. It's in a Freightliner. I bought a used tank, a reservoir tank. Don't know what kind of condition it is, and I put this truck on the road in April, and I changed the oil cooler right away, too, because it had a little wisp of oil in it. Could that just still be the oil coming out of the block or whatever? I flushed it once or twice, but I'm still getting this little sludge on my radiator cap.
We have a chemical called Thorough Flush. You put two bottles of it in with water, and it'll tell you how many hours or how many miles to drive it, and then flush it. And flush it with water, take it down the street and get it warm enough so the thermostat's open, and bring it back and drain it and flush it, because it is hard to get the oil out of the entire cooling system once you had an oil cooler failure.
It was failing, I guess, because there was still oil in it, and I just changed it when I bought the truck. I just made sure I changed it right away.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen engines flushed 7 and 8 times, or the whole system flushed 7 or 8 times and still show oil.
I'm assuming that's what it was from. That's why I was just asking. And I got one more question about I got a chug. I come up after I run and the truck comes up to a stoplight or something. I get this chug. It's almost like a miss. And then as soon as I just touch it, it doesn't bother otherwise. And I don't get no codes. My soot and my samples, my everything, I forget what it was, 0.2 was the soot. The last sample I had, there's nothing showing that there's an injector going out, but I get this chugging, and it's not really a miss. It's kind of like a chug. I don't know what it is.
Ethan, you have any thoughts on that? Have you felt that on the dyno?
Well, we saw that the other day. How long has it done this?
Well, it does it intermittently sometimes. See, I've got the original. I think it's got the original. What I did is I put this air dog the air off out of the fuel, and I bypassed the factory filter because mine's only got a single filter. It doesn't have the dual filter on it. And it's got an old Davco on it, but I don't know if the fuel pumps or anything. There's no really restrictions. Everything's supposed to run right. But according to my samples, there's no real injector issue, but it just gets this chug. And that's my next thing is going to the pressures. Maybe the pump's going bad.
I'm going to give you something to think about because you put the air dog on there, correct?
Correct.
Does this air dog have a line, a return line, to take the air back to the tank?
Yes, it does.
Okay, well, then I don't have anything to add to that. The new air dog, I'm not sure how it works because they've eliminated the line going back to the tank. And what do they do with the air? The air out of fuel, you got to put it somewhere. That's why we've stayed with the fast for the fast.
Right. Mine, I didn't want no pump or no electrics down there where it's at. So this is the old, this is just a Champ. It doesn't have a pump on it. It's just the filter housing head, and then the return line comes out of the top and goes to the back of the head. And yeah, I didn't want no electrics. That's why I didn't go with the other oil filter either. I went with the Clean Air Fleet. No electric.
I don't know how it separates. I don't know how it separates the air then and gets it back to the tank. But, interesting. We all learn something every day, so.
Yes, we do. That's right. Because of I didn't want no electrics. I didn't want nothing down there with the wheels and stuff. And that's why I went with these two products instead, because fast doesn't make just a screw-on head with no pump or no electrics on it, and it'll still take the air
out.
Yeah, but
I don't think you can get the air out if you don't. So you just might be getting a gulp of air, because the air has to go somewhere.
Right. I have a line that comes out of the top that goes into the tank for the air bleed.
What forces it back?
It comes when it does the return line, it comes out of the pump and goes to the one end of the filter head, and whatever it does in that head, it takes the air out, comes out of the top of the filter head, and then the line goes up to the back of the head on the engine.
So you're saying the return fuel carries the air back, the return fuel coming off the engine.
There's a return that goes up to the return line with the check valve in it from the filter head. The clean fuel goes up there, and then the return line, there's a check valve in there that comes, whatever the top comes out of the top of the filter head, and it filters it back to the tank in the return line.
All right. Back in the days of the big Cam Cummins, they had a check valve on the back of the gear pump that would bleed some fuel off to keep it cool. It was called a cooling kit fitting. And when that check valve failed, we would let return fuel would come in to the pump, and return fuel was aerated, and we would get that symptom that you have there. And in fact, we would get a rough idle. We'd get, whenever you took your foot off the throttle, it would come down and it would go to like the 400 or 500 RPM and shake. And sometimes you could feel it pulling the hill. So you might want to check that check valve.
Well, we took that out. We returned it right to the breather on the tank. It doesn't go into that check valve no more. We just returned it right to a single tank.
Okay.
So just for that reason, plus it was a pain in the butt to get back there to get it. So my next thing is the fuel pump. I don't know.
No, I don't think that's it. I would be making an appointment at our shop and getting on the dyno and letting Ethan and the other engineers try to find that problem.
Yeah, because I got vibrations too, and I don't know if it's that what's causing it or what. But I won't take up the way your time. I appreciate it.
Air can do that. Have you put our new damper and balancer on it yet for the vibration?
All right. With that, we've got to get to a break. The music's playing. We'll be right back. Stick around. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Bruce and Ethan are with me here. We're going to get right back to your phone calls. We're off to Virginia. Les, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. With all the ELD stuff that was happening last week, one of the potential issues was hackability through the ELD. So we've had Qualcomm in trucks for, 20 years now? What is the potential hackability through the ELD and Qualcomm system to the ECM?
Ethan, this would be a good question for you. Are you familiar with the ELDs at all?
A little bit. I've seen a few. We fixed a few issues when they were having a few here. Basically, the ELD, all it does is read the data link. It's a passive device. The ones I've seen, at least, it interfaces with the ECM only in a way that it reads what the ECM is putting out on the data link. It can't communicate to it or tell it the different commands or make it shut the truck off or anything along that lines.
Okay. Now, what about the systems like what International had? I think Freightliner might have one where it would alert the manufacturer that, hey, this truck has an issue. Is it the same way as the passive read-only system?
Yeah, and that way it would be.
Okay. Because the test that they talked about, the hacker was actually hooked into the OBD port. So.
Yeah. So just because I've been watching this too, and the people against ELDs will say anything, no matter how little sense it makes. You know, look at cars and how long we've had systems like OnStar. You know, General Motors, and virtually every manufacturer has some sort of over-the-air system like that. But nobody's hacking cars and running them into the ditch and turning them off. And I mean, every once in a while you see some, hacker display, but you don't always get the details. Like they actually had to, physically connect to the port of the vehicle, or there was a device on the vehicle that allowed this to happen. So the whole issue of hacking ELDs is really just a non-issue.
That's what I thought. All right, that's all I got today, guys. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. We're going to head off to Kansas this time. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, I had a question. I came across a 1990 Mack truck with an E7 motor. And I was just wondering if you guys knew anything about these motors. They're reliable, or fuel mileage. I mean, the truck's $4,000, so not a whole lot of money. But I was just wondering if you guys, is it a good engine? Is there any history on these things?
What year did you say it was?
It's a 1990. It's an old truck. It's like I said, it's a 90. It's an E7 motor is all I know about it. 350 horse.
Yeah, the biggest problem I see going that far back is you're dealing with a mechanical engine. And, not that a mechanical engine is bad. They're simple. They're inexpensive. They're easy to fix and work on. But you don't get anywhere near the life out of them or the fuel economy. I mean, the electronics are an amazing thing on a diesel engine. So other than for real specialized stuff, I just don't see the point in having a mechanical engine to move freight on the road these days.
Okay. All right then. Yeah, like I said, it's $4,000, and we run a lot of dirt roads, a lot of washboards and stuff like that. So, I mean, we try to keep cheaper stuff. That way, if it tears up, it's not a big deal. Just as long as we can keep it going, that's mainly our main thing.
Well,
we don't work on the Max, but we. If there's something that has a lot of complaints, we usually hear it, and I have never heard of a complaint on that engine. And if it is a mechanical, is it a mechanical with the Robert Bosch pump?
Yes, it is.
I think you'd be pretty happy with it if you're running these back roads and you're not putting a lot of miles on and you're in the dirt. I would go for it.
Okay. Yeah, that's what we do. I mean, a lot of our days... 200 miles, 250. That's the max for as far as miles. And it's a lot. It's a lot of 35 miles an hour, 45 miles an hour. Not a whole lot of weight sometimes. So
that fits in with what I said, other than some specialized kind of stuff. And then I mentioned, you know, moving freight over the road. In an operation like that, I could see a mechanical engine being a great thing to have. Again, cheap, inexpensive to work on, nice and simple. Yeah, clearly for an operation like that, I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Kevin, every time somebody calls us and they want to buy a 4.25 B-Cat or a Big Cam Cummins, we always ask, what are you going to do with it? And if they're hauling asphalt or sand and gravel and running local or logging and most of their miles are off-road and slow and they're in a lot of dirt, then we go for it.
Yeah, I actually think that's a great engine for that kind of operation. The minute you're going to be out on the road all day, right down the highway, they're just not efficient enough. But yeah, for those, the kind of operations you just described, I think they're ideal.
See, when most people call us, we assume that they're over the road. So when a person calls the show or calls our shop, they really need to say what type of hauling they're going to be doing and what kind of miles and what kind of roads. And that helps to clarify the answer.
It does, for sure. Let's head off to Ohio. Michael, welcome to the program.
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I've been trying to do this conversion, putting the 264 gear in, but I'm not having any luck with finding somebody who can get it for me. I didn't know
Why
if you had
that?
Anybody suggesting anybody. I don't know. They're saying they can't find it.
Where are you located?
I'm in Napoleon, Ohio. I've had somebody in Detroit, and I've had somebody in Youngstown look for it, and
they can't find you 264 gears?
Not in 23,000 pounds. Is that not what I should be using on a single gear or a single housing?
Yeah. Phone number.
Okay.
303-289-3318. All right. Here's how you remember that. 303 is Colorado. 289 is a Ford and 3318 Detroit. That's how I remember that phone number. That's Western Truck Parts.
Okay.
And that's who I call when I need the gears.
All right, super.
So
go ahead, give him a call.
Just to help you out there, Michael, if the 264 exactly isn't available, you could be anywhere from 260 to about 285, and you're going to be fine. There's very little difference in RPM from those. So there are several other gear sets that might fit into that range, and they'll work just fine.
Yeah, somebody said something about a 259, that he can get a 259.
259,
I don't.
Yeah, 259 would work. So would all the way up to, say, I know there is a 285, I believe Spicer has a 285. Anywhere in that range, and that'll give you more options when you're looking. It doesn't have to be that 264. We just want to be in that range somewhere. Let's, you know what? We're heading right into a break. So I don't want to start a call. We'll have to interrupt it. We will get back to some more calls right after this break. We have more coming. So don't go away. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. If you haven't seen our online university yet, Let's Truck University, we have two courses loaded up in there, and I am working on two more right now. We have about 30 courses total planned. We're covering business topics, maintenance topics, financial topics, health, everything trucking. The course I'm working on right now, we should have it out by November, is all about how to buy your first truck, how to get started, how to get that business set up, and how to succeed in that first year where everybody tends to fail. So head on over to the website and check it out. It's letstruck.com. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Sure do.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. We're off to Idaho. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi. I've got an oil sample there for you. It's on a 97 M14 engine. There's 18,000 miles on that sample. And I was just, the silicon and the iron are very consistent from my previous samples. I'm just making sure that those numbers are good.
The sample itself is really good. It's one of the reasons I like the N14. It's so clean burning. No fuel dilution, no soot. Everything on the oil is holding up really well. I think the silicon is a little high, and so is the iron. Not outrageously high, but much more than I'd want to see in 18,000 miles. And the two go hand in hand. The more silicon's dirt, the more dirt you get in the engine, the more wear you're going to have. And that's why the iron is higher than normal. I would take a look and really do a good inspection on the intake system and try to figure out where you're getting dirt, a torn air filter, a something sealing or not sealing properly. Loose connection somewhere we're getting air in there, or dirt, I mean, in the airstream. The silicon, we like to see it stay under 10. 5 or 6 is pretty normal. Yours is at 13. And iron, you know, I wouldn't expect to see it over 10 with just 18,000 miles, and you're at 21.
Okay. I want, because, and it prompted me from a previous show, you suggested somebody wasn't oiling their fleet air filter enough, and I wondered if that was my problem, so I pulled mine out and we just cleaned it, and I re-cleaned it and made sure I put maybe too much oil on this time to see if that would make a difference.
Well, and was that prior to this 18,000 miles?
Yes.
Okay, then that's good, because it rules that problem out. So we know now, if you've cleaned and properly oiled that filter, the fleet air filter, we see very low silicon numbers when it's oiled properly. So we've ruled that problem out. Somewhere in this truck, you're still getting some dirt. Bruce, any ideas on an N14 where else to look? Uh-oh. I didn't bring those guys back. Hold on a second. Bruce, you're there. Ethan, go ahead. Bruce?
Yes. What kind of truck is it?
It's a Kenworth T800.
T800, air filter under the hood?
Yes.
What I want you to do is take the air filter housing off and the piping going to the turbo and clean it all and make sure you don't have any corrosion between any of the rubber elbows and the aluminum pipe. And then get yourself a can of spray white lithium grease. And spray inside the housing, spray all the piping. Everyone should be doing that at least once a year anyway. And then what the white lithium grease will do, if there is a leak and we're getting unfiltered air in, it'll show you a trace after you run it another 10 or 15,000 miles. All right?
Very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's keep rolling here. We're going to head off to Iowa. Guy, welcome to the program.
Afternoon, gentlemen. I just had my radiator changed down in Arizona, and my tank was always nice and clean, never had any corrosion. After I had it changed out, now the thing has just all kinds of crud in it. What would be the cause of that?
I don't know.
Because I was running final charge antifreeze, and when they put it back together, they said they put red in there. And so I didn't know if there was like a chemical reaction between the two or what. I checked it to see if there's oil in it, stuck my finger in it, and I'm not bringing out any oil.
So you have, did you say it was sludge?
Well, I don't know what's in it. I mean, like I said, I stuck my finger in it and didn't get anything out, but yet my tank is just all discolored and everything on the inside now. But I can't stick my finger in there far enough to get up to the wall to see what's on the wall of the tank.
Well, could be an oil cooler leaking a little bit.
Okay, and I was kind of thinking that, but I do check my oil to make sure, and there's no, I'm not seeing any antifreeze or anything in the oil as of yet.
Right. So on an oil cooler, it's a slight leak. Keep in mind, the oil pressure is greater than the water pressure.
Okay.
So it'll have a tendency to push oil into the coolant versus coolant into the oil.
Okay. And then another question I had is, I just bought this truck 2 months ago. It's got a ISX engine in it. It's a 13 Cascadia. And when I fire it up, it's got like a, almost sounds like the turbo is doing the whistling thing. But when I take off and I go up through the gears, if I'm pulling a hard hill, I don't even hear my turbo running, you know, winding up or anything. And I checked the charge air cooler because people said, you know, if you're hearing a whistling, it's charge air cooler and stuff like that. That's not leaking at all. Any ideas on that?
Do you have a turbo boost gauge?
Not as of yet. It's a old fleet truck. So like I said, I just got 2 months ago and I'm waiting to get one put in.
Yeah. Our kit's only $68, and it's a very easy gauge to put in. It's about the easiest gauge there is. And then we could talk more intelligently about the turbo. In the meantime, you might want to take the turbo off and take that turbine housing off and clean the fins for the variable geometry turbo part. And then work the actuator back and forth to make sure that it's free.
Yeah, I'd rather have you guys do that.
All right. And then if you bring it in, think about having us put the Dorothy on there, and that way that'll keep the soot from accumulating as fast in the turbo.
Yeah, I burn through a lot of diff, too. I burn through, like, every 200 miles I go through a gallon.
Oh, wow. You need to get that in. Let's do an emissions tune-up and get a Dorothy on there and get that consumption cut way back.
That sounds a little all high.
Right. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah. Let's try to squeeze one more call in before we've got to get out of here. Let's go to Alabama. JC, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I got a question about a truck I'm looking at. It's a 05 NXX Cat Acer. It's had a in frame at 600. It's got 400,000 on a platinum rebuild. I dynoed it. It set at 475. It put 407 to the ground and had 6.5 inches of blow by. Is that pretty good? I'm still waiting on the oil sample to come back on it.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Yeah, because I looked up on CAT, and all CAT said was it's within specs, so I was just curious.
Okay. The 475 ACERT with the Pittsburgh Power Box on it is a beautiful, beautiful package.
Yeah.
That engine responds so well, the 475, to the Power Box.
Okay. Now, might not ask, but it has had the, when they did an end frame on it, they put the lower compression pistons in it, and what do they call that, the IVA system? Or some kind of little actuators up there. They said they deleted those. Is that a, as far as problem with the Power Box or?
No, that's not a problem at all. The, our full tilt Pittsburgh Power ported and ceramic coated manifold makes another big improvement on an ACERT CAT.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it, guys. That's all I had. I'll let somebody else get on there.
All right. Thanks for the call. And that is going to do it. Bruce, Ethan, anything you guys want to wrap up with? We got about a minute.
No. We're in the process of we built a new welding table to build more fixtures to be able to make more installation kits for the Dorothy. One of our employees is full time just building installation kits, so we're ramped up and ready to go.
Excellent. That's exciting because the early results on that are pretty amazing. We'll talk about that more next time and all kinds of other stuff as well. Thanks for joining us. This has been the Power Hour. Thanks to Bruce and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rothberg. All right, everybody. Thanks. We'll see you back here tomorrow for Destination Health.